Today on Family Talk.
The fifth chapter of 2 Corinthians proclaims that because of Christ's sacrifice on the cross, we are new creations, no longer bound or trapped by sin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and I hope you can celebrate the fact that we are made new through Jesus Christ. Our guest today can certainly appreciate that transformational power of God and His redeeming love. Her name is Jessa Dillo Crisp. Now, yesterday, she shared the brutal story of how she was sexually abused by her own family, who prostituted her and forced her into posing for pornography starting at a very young age. If you didn't catch the first part of Jess's story, I encourage you to go back after this broadcast and listen to it, because it is powerful and extremely moving. Now, today, Jessa will share how her relationship with Jesus radically turned her life around and why she decided to receive a student visa to stay in the United States to attend school for the first time in her life. Her husband, John, will also join the conversation. He'll talk about his first reaction to hearing about her horrible past and why they are both passionate about helping other young girls and kids break free from the darkness of sex trafficking. Now, before we begin, as we mentioned yesterday, the subject matter discussed throughout this program may not be appropriate for younger children who may be tuning in, so we urge parents to use discretion. Okay, let's pick up now on this edition of Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, asking Jessa Crisp how she was able to escape back to Colorado for the second time.
Jessa, you've brought us to a point now that you're in a formalized prostitution ring and being gang raped. I can't even imagine what that's like. Where'd you go from there? How'd you get out of that?
So once again, the woman in Colorado who had invested in my life and who had helped me previous and who actually helped me escape the first time, she was the person that I reached out to, and she actually helped me escape the second time.
You're kidding.
And so I came back to Colorado and once again only had a six-month tourist visa. So here I am, kind of in the same predicament, going, I will have to go back to Canada if I don't figure out another way to stay in the States. And for a person who's been through so much trauma, it definitely puts a lot of fear in questions, and it creates instability. And so in that place, I was not wanting to unpack my suitcase and not wanting to get settled or even go to therapy, just because in the back of my head, I was like, I'm going to have to go back to Canada. I'm going to have to leave the safety that I know. And so the board of directors at the safe house and this woman came up with a plan for me to go to school. Now, if you remember from yesterday, I had never been to school my entire life, not elementary school, not middle school, not high school. So when they said that to me, I kind of laughed it off and was like, are you serious? Nah, not happening. And made a lot of noise, went to my bedroom, slammed the door, and was having a temper tantrum, basically. And it was told to me that day, Jessa, if you can read, you can learn anything. So I actually took a black Sharpie, and I pulled it out. And in my room, I wrote on my arm, if I can read, I can learn anything. And we went to the library and picked up books, and I started to study. So I did one of my first essays as my college application and was able to get into Nazarene Bible College and started my educational journey. And so,
and you were accepted.
And I was accepted. And when I got that acceptance letter, I don't think I've cried as much as I did that day, because it was like, I maybe have value. Maybe I can be better than just being a little prostitute.
And as a student, the U.S. government allowed you to stay.
They did. So I got an F1 student visa, and it was pretty exciting because my first exam that I ever got back was a Psych 101 exam, and I got 100% on it.
Oh,
and I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, I like studied night and day for this thing, but I can actually do it, and I'm actually intelligent. I'm not stupid. Growing up, my messages that were told to me were, Jessa, you're too stupid to do anything but sex work. And here I'm holding this exam going, I am valuable, and I am smart because Jesus Christ has made me able to go to school and study. And so school really changed my life, and that
was... How long ago was this?
So that was, I graduated in 2015. I actually graduated summa cum laude, valedictorian.
Did you really?
So,
good for you, Jessa.
So that was amazing. And I left that experience going, God, if you give me the opportunity, I long to get my doctorate in clinical psychology because I want to be able to help other people who've been through the exact same things that I've been through.
Are you working on that now?
I am. God has given John and I the ability to co-found a nonprofit called Bridge Hope that works with survivors of human trafficking. And so I do that and work hands-on with survivors.
John, I am so captivated by this story. I haven't really given you a chance to talk much, but...
That's okay.
Does your heart grieve now, thinking about the woman you love being a little child and being abused in such a wretched way?
Yeah. In fact, shortly after Jessa and I started dating, I got a phone call from her, very serious tone in her voice, and she said, you need to come over and we need to talk. And this was probably one of the longest car rides of my life as I was driving over to Jessa's house. And I got over there and we went for a walk, and I sensed labored breathing and just a heaviness. And I knew that what she was getting ready to tell me was really serious and mattered a lot to Jessa. And she said to me that she wanted me to hear this from her first.
Yeah. You had no clue what her background was.
No clue. I just knew she was incredibly special and that she loved the Lord. And we were getting to know each other, so every day was something new. And she shared with me that she was a survivor of human trafficking and shared with me some of the headlines of kind of what had taken place, the 30,000-foot view, and didn't give me any of the details at that time. But I entered a grieving process as I was dealing with the realities of what Jessa had experienced, this woman that I was falling in love with, and what that meant for our relationship and what that meant for our future together. And
let me tell you about my own experience with Shirley, because she never went through anything like this. But her father was an alcoholic. She had a great mother who really got her through. But every person listening to us who's had an alcoholic parent knows that the one thing you do not want to do is reveal who you are and where you've been.
Yeah.
And so I went with Shirley for a summer, a whole summer, and was really beginning to realize what a great lady she was and is. And we were talking one night. We were on campus and we were alone and we were talking. And she said, I have something I have to tell you. And I said, my goodness, what is it? And she told me about her childhood and some of the experiences. And she said, I've been afraid to tell you because I thought that it would not make you interested in me anymore. I don't know what reaction you had, but mine was to have my eyes filled with tears and say, Shirley, I want to spend the rest of my life making up to you for what you've been through. Did you feel the same way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think in that moment, I was able to communicate to Jessa that she was not defined by her past and that she was a beautiful creation and Christ.
Were you a believer by that time?
Yes. Yes. Very
and
much.
So you also made your contribution to her understanding of the gospel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as the gospel is a message of grace, I think that
what a great love story. Jessa, the Lord brought John into your life, didn't he?
Oh, he did, and I'm
just
so grateful.
It took a little while for him to get the message across to you.
Our story in our life and our marriage is definitely one of redemption.
How have you removed from your mind the images and the feelings and the abuse that you have been through when you were at your most vulnerable, when you were a little kid? Does it haunt you now? Do you still have dreams? You still wake up and say, this will happen to me again? Do you go through those things?
I totally do. And I have been on what I call my healing journey. And when I first started my healing journey, those nightmares were every single day, if not a couple times a day, and the triggers and the flashbacks. And as I have progressed in working with a therapist and engaging with Christ in the deepest areas of my pain, have been able to move into a place where today I can say, yes, I still get triggered. Yes, I still see a therapist. Yes, I still have flashbacks, but it does not control my life, and it's gotten much less than it used to be.
You seem whole. You seem healthy. You seem incredibly secure. How could that have happened? That had to be a gift from the Lord, didn't it?
It truly is a gift from God. And a lot of people have walked this journey with me in a very intimate way and have been on their knees praying with me, praying for me. And then God brought this man beside me, and he's been part of that journey as well. And so it has been a very difficult journey, but also, too, I wouldn't trade it for anything because it's given me a deep appreciation for who my God is.
Why do you think there is so little compassion for kids who are going through this? I mean, I got to tell you, talking to Linda Smith, many members of Congress oppose any efforts to reach out to kids like this. And they do whatever they can to allow the men to get away with it. They see the men as the victim. And in fact, when they discover a child who is being abused in this way, they often blame the child, the individual. Mm-hmm. Have you been aware of that? That's what Linda shared with us. Why in the world is there so little heart for these kids that are just being ripped to pieces?
I don't have a good answer. I think that is something that we might not know fully until we get to heaven, but I often wonder if there's a lot more moving pieces than what we could make sense of. There could be a trauma that's not being addressed in the lives of other individuals. And if we don't address our own trauma, how can we have compassion for somebody else?
Before I met Jessa, my conception of human trafficking was very much centered around what we see in Hollywood, that it's something that happens elsewhere. And as we were looking on the Polaris website, the recent statistics are that in Denver, it's a $39.9 million industry. In Atlanta, it's $240 million.
Yeah.
Human trafficking.
39. Say that again.
$39.9 million.
A year.
A year.
In one city.
In Denver.
In Denver alone.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So it's that righteous anger that makes you want to just go out and make a difference. And that's why, as I was falling in love with Jessa, I knew very quickly that this was going to be a mission that we both fight, and that we were going to join arms and make this a battle that we were going to fight together. So.
I mentioned last time that I was on the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, where we heard testimony about all of this.
Yes.
One of the persons who came to testify was a man named Barry Lynn. Barry worked for the ACLU, and he came that day to speak on behalf of pornographers. And said child pornography is not a good thing. It shouldn't happen. But once it happens, there should be no restriction on the sale or distribution of it. Much of the pain and the angst associated with child pornography is what happens when it is commercially sold. There is a photograph of a girl or a boy going through the most horrendous experience of their lives, and there's not anything that they can do to get those materials, those photographs, all of those horrible experiences that are documented. It's documented child abuse is what it is.
Yes.
And that there should be no limitation on it. I came out of my chair. I mean, that's ACLU at its worst.
You know, I can say as a survivor of child pornography that even today, knowing that people are still viewing my images, which they are, I had a conversation not too long ago, again, with individuals that are helping me on that side. And it's hard because as somebody who's experienced that and knowing those images are still being viewed in some ways, if I think about it for too long, it makes me feel like it's still happening to me. I'm still being raped in some way. Somebody's still making money off of me in some way and in some means.
Have you seen evidence of that, or you just know it?
I have. So we have found IP addresses, and law enforcement has looked into that. And it definitely is a pain that I still carry.
John, it must absolutely eat your heart out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see Jessa, you know, going through and dealing with the realities that some of that stuff is still out there. And the reality is it's probably a losing battle in terms of getting it off of the internet, because they're very crafty in the ways that they change IP addresses and how they constantly evade any sort of law enforcement repercussions. And yeah, it's really frustrating and upsetting. And I think what needs to happen is we bring light and awareness into the realities that there is an inescapable connection between human trafficking and pornography. And I think the people who are making the pornography industry so profitable, I think we'll begin to chip away at that. And that might be when changes happen.
You know, one of the findings of our commission is that whenever you find child abuse and especially child murder, the individuals who perpetrate these horrible crimes always have pornography in their homes or garages or cars. Always. I mean, it is inevitable. They get hooked on those images, and it is progressive and addictive.
Yes.
And once they're hooked on it, they want to experience it, and it leads to the ultimate, which is what happened to Ted Bundy. I interviewed him just 17 hours before he was executed, and that was his story. He asked me to tell everybody, parents especially, beware, because that stuff is deadly. And he said it's what led him to kill what we now believe to have been 100 or more women. And I was with him right before he died, and he wanted the world to know that these people are stalking your children, and you better do something about it. My goodness. I've spent 25 years trying to articulate the cause of these boys and girls. And Jessa, I thank you so much for sharing so passionately about your childhood. Are you going to overcome this? Are you going to be able to pass along help?
Completely. And I believe that. That's only because of Jesus Christ being my healer and my redeemer.
What do you hope to do?
In the future?
Yes.
Oh, goodness. I want to get my doctorate in clinical psychology, and I would like to continue to work with my husband to be able to provide resources and hope to individuals who've been through human trafficking and other crimes that perpetrate evil against children.
And I'm sure it's your hope that by coming out of the closet and talking about this as openly as you have, that there will be somebody out there that will say, me too.
Yes. Exactly.
Somebody out there that will say, I can't remain silent.
Yep.
I have got to fight this.
Yep.
And, you know, the scripture tells us that the Lord said, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I shudder to think what the people who are doing this are going to face on the other side.
Yeah.
That's right.
Can you imagine eternity in hell? You know, it's on a level almost of what the Nazis did to the Jews and Poles and Gypsies and others in World War II. Maybe on an individual basis rather than mass murder.
Yep, a personal Holocaust.
Yeah. Well, Jessa, there is so much in your story. We're talking a lifetime of experience, and nearly everything you went through is relevant to this aspect of your story. Thank God for the recovery that I see and hear, and that the Lord just really gave you the strength to overcome it. Part of that miracle was that you were adopted by another family that loved you. We've got 1 minute left. Tell us that.
So I was adopted by a couple that truly love me and that have really been a huge part of my life in helping me walk in recovery and teaching me how to grow closer to God. And so through that, I really believe that without them in my life, I would never have been able to have gotten married to John, because they truly taught me what it was like to live in a family, to see marriage lived out.
Is it the first time you've ever felt loved?
It was, yeah.
Oh, my. John, take care of this lady.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. She's a jewel.
I agree.
And keep us informed as your life unfolds. And I want to say to our listeners who are out there, help us deal with this issue. You know, there aren't very many people talking about it. People don't want to talk about it. Some people will not hold still to listen to it. And I want to tell you, pastors will not talk about it for the most part. They don't talk about pornography because sitting out in front of them are hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of men who are into the stuff. And that's wrong, too. And so we're doing everything we can to articulate it and to plead your cause, and you've helped us do that today. John and Jessa Crisp, your middle name is Dillo.
Correct.
That's your adopted family.
That's my adopted family.
And they're sitting in the gallery.
They are.
Oh, my goodness.
And I love them a lot.
All right. Blessings to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. What an amazing, godly woman who has overcome so much. If you would like to learn more about John and Jessa's ministry, you can visit bridgehopenow.org or jessacrisp.com. We encourage you to pray for Jessa as she heals from this traumatic event. And please also support the ministry that John and Jessa have begun, which seeks to set free those who are in the bondage of sex trafficking. Now, as we mentioned on our last program, if you are aware of someone in your life who has been abused or exploited, please call the American Association of Christian Counselors at 800-526-8673. These godly trained professionals do everything they can to deliver people from this dark pit of despair and to fully realize their worth in the eyes of our Heavenly Father. Again, that number for the American Association of Christian Counselors is 800-526-8673. By the way, you can also look them up online at aacc.net to find a counselor near you. You can also read through any of their helpful materials available online as well. That's aacc.net. Now, as we concluded the program today, you heard Jessa Crisp mention her wonderful adoptive parents, Jody and Linda Dillo, who were in the studio at the time we were recording. Dr. Dobson was so moved by their testimony that they've decided to sit down and record one more program. So we hope you will join us again tomorrow to hear the conclusion of this incredible story of redemption right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
How do people often come to you asking for advice, direction in life, maybe prayer over tough issues? Could be about their marriage, maybe about their children, maybe a tough issue that they're facing right now. If that's you, have you ever thought about going back to school or furthering your education? I'm so excited to tell you about a brand new center that has just started at the world's most exciting university, Liberty University. Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors and executive director of the Center for Counselor Education and Family Studies at Liberty. We have partnered up with world-renowned psychologist, marriage and family expert, Dr. James Dobson, to create the James C. Dobson Center for child development, marriage, and family at Liberty. But here's what's most important. We now have three programs of study coming out of that center where you can, regardless of major, doesn't matter what you're studying, whether you're going to go into psychology, business, science, or what have you, you can now get a minor from the James C. Dobson Center online and become a certified marriage and family relationship coach while you're going to college. Yes, you can. While you're going to graduate school, too, regardless of what you're studying, God has opened up a door here that's so unique. To learn more, just simply go to liberty.edu/Dobson. You'll find out everything you need to know. I can't believe God has opened up this door and brought Liberty University and Dr. James C. Dobson together to offer this program. I hope you go there. Liberty University. It's liberty.edu/Dobson.